Welcome to the Betting Above the Rim podcast, episode 27. Today's date, February 7th. In this podcast, we get into four things. Number one, we look at after the All-Star games are picked and the Scotty Barnes and Trae Young been added as injury replacements, I look at the five players that I think was most deserving and may have gotten snubbed out of an All-Star bid. Next, we go to the college game. We look at a team that I was really high on, Jim Larranaga's Miami Hurricanes, who have lost six out of the last 10 and just got blown out by Virginia. What's going on with the U, and can they turn their season around? Next, to stick with the college game, I'm going to give you two teams that have really underachieved so far this year and two teams that have overachieved so far this year, and we'll talk about their chances moving forward. And then lastly, we're going to go to Phoenix, the Valley of the Sun. I'm going to give you my super six off the bench and my starting five for the Phoenix Suns. And let's get started with the fact that the NBA announced their all-star teams just last week. And of course, one of the big things that we always want to talk about is who got left out of the all-star game. Listen, folks, there's always going to be people that are going to be left out, but I wanted to go with the people that I thought were the biggest snubs. And let's start with first bringing up the list, and then we'll go individually. De'Aaron Fox, Rudy Gobert, Domantas Sabonis, Alperen Şengün. Yes, I said Alperen Şengün, and Kristaps Porzingis. And let's get started with De'Aaron Fox, who's had a really great year for a Sacramento team that had no All-Stars, folks, but is still one of the best teams in the West. De'Aaron Fox scoring 27.3 points per game. Folks, that's almost 6 points per game over his career average. He's shooting a 4% higher from three. His assists a little bit down, but he's playing well, and the turnovers are down. And De'Aaron Fox has really had a great year. And to look at him, maybe people are going to play, but maybe the assist numbers aren't high enough. But De'Aaron Fox has been absolutely fantastic for a team in Sacramento who people thought overachieved last year, and they're right in the thick of it. Let's move on to the big man in the middle in Minnesota and Rudy Gobert. And I've been on Rudy Gobert on this network because of I thought his play, particularly last year, but he has been absolutely fantastic, Big Rudy. Second in the NBA in rebounding at 12.6 rebounds per game. Rudy's giving you 2.1 blocks per game, shooting at a 64% from the floor, and scoring higher than he did for his career. And I think the big thing with Rudy is he's taken a team in Minnesota and made them one of the best defensive teams. Now, I know they've slipped up the last couple of weeks, but it's really made them one of the top defensive teams in the NBA. And a big reason for that has been the play of Rudy Gobert, a reason why Minnesota could be sneaking for that one seed. How about let's go back to Sacramento and a player that's above Rudy Gobert and number one in the NBA and rebounds per game, and that's Domantas Sabonis. I mean, this guy has been absolutely fantastic since coming to Sacramento. Think about this, folks. Like, think about the trade. It was Halliburton, right, for Sabonis. How many times have you seen stars switch teams and both teams win? Both teams won it. And Sabonis has been absolutely fantastic this year, scoring 19.7 points per game, 13.1 rebounds, and 8.2 assists. How can a center that is top 50 in scoring, first in rebounding, seventh in assists, and eighth in field goal percentage not make the All-Star team? That is such a huge snub for Domantas Sabonis, who is well-deserved. Speaking of big men in the West, I'm going to give you a player that maybe you may not have heard about, but I have been such a huge, huge fan. His name, you don't know, is Alperen Şengün, the Turkish treat. Why do I like Alperen Şengün, folks? Top 35 in scoring at 21.6 points per game, 15th in rebounding, 9.3, 39th in assists at 5.1, shooting at 54.2% from the floor. And a Şengün that has really elevated his game this year. And really, folks, when you talk about a team that's got Fred VanVleet, a team that's got Jalen Green, right? a team that's got Dylan Brooks, the best player in that team is Alperovic and Gooden. And go look up his stats. The only center that may have overall stats like this that possibly that is better than him, honestly, folks, do you know who it is? It's a guy named Nikola Jokic, folks, if you really think about it. Because if you know, yes, the 23 points per game, the rebounds, and assists, only Joker is the only player in the NBA or center that's got those kind of stats. He's well-deserving. Speaking of well-deserving, folks, Kristaps Porzingis has been fantastic for Boston. Now, you can argue, I can say, well, maybe I should go with Derek White here. But Porzingis is getting you 19.6 points per game, nearly 7 rebounds, 2 assists, and getting you 1.9 blocks. And this is a player, Porzingis, that, as a Knicks fan, was tantalizing. Remember, KD called him the unicorn when he first got to the league. And at 7 foot, over 7 feet tall, his ability to shoot the ball from three and what he can do has really been something that has made Boston the best team, in my opinion, in the NBA. Now, obviously with Porzingis, you're going to have injury concerns. And I think that's always going to be the thing with the Zinger. But his ability to shoot the ball from three, his rim protection, right? And that's another score, especially on nights when Tatum or Brown can not be effective. Porzingis has been the perfect third superstar for Boston. And dare I say, yeah, maybe Derek White, if I would have had a sixth, would be that. But it's really hard to get four players, let alone three players, from the same team. Let's move on to the college game and a team that I was so high on this year. Top 25, I think even maybe top 15 to begin the season. Folks, and that's the Miami Hurricanes. A Miami Hurricane team that made the Final Four last year, which I do believe made the Elite Eight the year before that. And Jim Laurinaga, folks, I really, really believe this, and maybe this is my little bias here from a guy from New York City. I think he's one of the best coaches in the country. But something's amiss here this year with this team. And a team that's lost 6 out of the last 10 games, and if we pull up their scores, the thing that really drove me nuts is this 60-38 loss to Virginia. Now, anybody knows anything about Virginia? Virginia plays this pack line defense, and it's really something of all of it, something that's really tough to stop, or actually score, I should say. But Miami can't be getting 38 points. Like, this is a problem here. So let's take a look at what first has gone right for Miami. And that's Norchet Omier, the center, getting you 17.6 points per game, 9.8 rebounds. His scoring's up 4.3 points per game. His free throw shooting percentage is up. Yeah, his rebounds are down a little bit. His shooting free throw shooting percentage is up. Rebounds down. Field goal percentage up. He's been the goods, and he's done everything that is we expected. The guy that's maybe been a big disappointment, folks, is Nigel Peck. Nigel Peck, now, if you're going to say to me, well, wait a minute, coach. Nigel Peck scoring 14 points per game, right? He scored 13.6 last year. Folks, he's shooting it worse from the floor, shooting it worse from three, shooting it nearly 10 percentage points less from the free throw line. His turnovers are up. And when you thought you were getting Nigel Peck to play with Isaiah Wong, who left after last year, imagine if they had Isaiah Wong in his team, he's carried more of the scoring burden, and he's not done that, right? Then you can go on to Matt Cleveland, the transfer from Florida State, who's giving you 14.2 points per game, but folks, three of the last five games, he's giving you 2 points. So which Matt Cleveland are we going to get? Are we going to get the one that's getting you 2 points every other game? Or the one that's got you 15 in a 82-74 win versus Virginia Tech? Or 16 in that three-point loss at Syracuse? Lastly, a guy that really got off to a really hot start and then got hurt is Wugar Poplar, who's getting you about 13.9 points per game. And if you really look at Wugar early on in the season, 10 of his first 11 games, double figures, right? How about the fact that 4 of his last 6 games, single figures? So what does that mean? That means Jimmy Larrañaga has got to get this team going. And do I believe in Jimmy Larrañaga? Absolutely. I think if Jimmy Larrañaga gets his team into the tournament, they're going to be make a run. But they got to get there first. And with the way they're sitting in the middle of the ACC, an ACC that I don't know if you're going to sit there and say, let's be honest, is it better than the Big 12? No. Is it better than the Big East? I don't think so. Is it better than the SEC? I don't think so. So now you're looking at a league that you would dare say is the fourth best league in the country. So Jimmy Larrañaga's got to get this team rolling. And if you really quickly look at their schedule the rest of the way, as I pull it up really quickly here, they got some chances here. They have a big game against North Carolina Saturday. North Carolina, you know, may be in a bad mood after the loss to Clemson, but they have to go to at Clemson, at BC, home Duke, home Georgia Tech, at Carolina, home BC, at Florida State. They got some road to make up here. I do believe in Jimmy Larrañaga, but it's getting late early. Let's stick with teams that have not been playing well and really underachieving teams so far this year. And folks, I've even brought this team up. Lord have mercy. What in the hell has gotten into Michigan? I'll tell you what. Hunter Dickinson leaves, right? They try to get Caleb Love. They can't get him into grad school. Goes to Arizona. And now Michigan is sitting at 2-9 in last place in the Big Ten. 7-15 overall. And folks, they're not losing. They're getting bludgeoned. 15 home versus Illinois. 32 at Purdue. 10 versus Iowa. 10 versus a Rutgers team that hasn't played well. And lost by 20 to a Michigan State team when Tom Izzo got his sixth or 700 career win. So what is going on with Michigan and why they're so poor? Well, first things first, folks, they can't defend, right? They can't defend. And you think about Michigan, you got a guy like Doug McDaniel, who's a pro prospect, getting you 17 points per game, 4.9 assists, 3.9 rebounds, right? He's doubled his scoring, right? So, you know, Doug's done his thing. You know, you can look at a kid like a Terrence Williams, number 5, right? 12.5 points per game, 4.1 rebounds, right? All right, so his scoring's up, right? So he's giving you a little bit more of what you thought you were going to get. But this is not the team that we expected. This is not what we thought we were getting out of Michigan. So now after what happened now with Juwan Howard and his strength coach, and now what happened with Greg Gard last year, who they played tonight, does Michigan pull the plug on Juwan Howard? You know, it becomes tough, folks. Like, Georgia had to struggle really mightily for years before they got rid of Patrick Ewing. But I'm starting to wonder this, folks. Alumni players coming back to coach their team without college experience. Juwan Howard, Patrick Ewing, Mike Woodson, Penny Hardaway. These are 4 all-time great college and pro players. But it's different in the college game. And Michigan has struggled, even with an experienced coach like Phil Martelli on the bench. Remember, folks, Phil started off the season head coach as Juwan Howard recovered from surgery. Now, let's go out west to a team that, God, I mean, they may be more disappointing. Oh, no, maybe not more disappointing, but equally up there. And that's USC. Folks, a USC team that people are talking about maybe going to a Final Four. A USC team that had one of the most dynamic players in the country. A USC team that had one of the top recruiting class, the number one player in the country that came in. A USC team that has LeBron James' son. 9-13, last place for Andy Enfield, which we thought was going to be a big year for Andy with his team. And folks, same thing here. I mean, thank goodness they beat Oregon State by 30 because they came into that game on a 6-game losing streak. So it'll be interesting to see if this team could turn around because, folks, when you look at USC, like, This team has a mix of experience and young talent. And you got to start with Boogie Ellis, who I think is one of the best players in the Pac-12. But his scoring's down to 17.3. His shooting's the same. Three-point shooting percentage is up, right? So Boogie's really done his thing. Backcourt mate, number one player in the country, Isaiah Collier. Getting you 15.4 points per game. The kid out of Atlanta went all across the country, right? And he's shooting it at 31.3% from three, which he's got to be better. 50.6% from the floor, which is fantastic. So you start looking past them, and then that's where you start seeing the problems, right? Kobe Johnson, who people expected a lot out of, is only getting you 10.6 points per game and shooting at 26.1% from three, down 10 percentage points from last year. That's someone that they really expected to do well. You can look at the play of DJ Robin, who was a transfer, Dennis Rodman's kid, only getting you about 7.3 points per game, 5.2 rebounds. And really, it's been single figures in three of the last five games. And then there's going to be the talk about Bronny. Listen, folks, I don't think people understand coming back from a heart ailment. It's a serious thing for a young man. And Bronny has had to work his way back. And there's been glimpses of Bronny, but not so much as of late, with only one game out of, I think, his last seven in which he got to double figures, including two goose eggs back-to-back versus Colorado and Washington State. You're going to wonder here, and there's going to be talk. Does Bronny still come out, or does Bronny give it another year? It'll be an interesting thing to watch moving forward, but the pressure's on Andy Enfield. Another team to talk about, Villanova. And I just don't know with this team. Because Villanova is a team that really has you scratching your head. Because when you look at Villanova, 5-6 in the Big East, big game tonight that they have at Xavier as 3.5-point underdogs. You look at a team that spent all that NIL money. And I've talked about it, I'm not gonna go into it again with Kyle Neptune. But every time I write Kyle Neptune's team off, they turn around and they give you a win, and you're like, okay, all right, they're gonna turn it around here. Think about this, folks. This team has beaten Texas Tech, top 25 team in the country, by almost 20. They've beaten North Carolina. They've beaten Memphis. They've beaten Creighton, right? They lost by one. I was there versus UConn in a great game on a Saturday night. They just beat Providence by 18. But then you rewind, and now you're saying, well, this also team that lost at Penn, lost to St. Joe's, lost to Drexel, got beat by 20 to St. John's, had a double-digit lead in the last 5 minutes and lost in over two overtimes to Butler. Which team is it? They got a chance to figure it out, folks. They got that big game tonight at Xavier. And then they got Seton Hall, Georgetown, Butler before they play UConn again. And then they got Georgetown, Providence, Seton Hall, Creighton. They can turn this around. And when you look at this team really quickly, right, and you got a big Eric Dixon at 15.9 points per game, 6.4 rebounds. When you got TJ Bamba, when you got Justin Moore, when you got Tyler Burton, when you got Malik Armstrong, you have a chance. They got to play better down the stretch. Hakeem Hart's got to be better. They pulled him out of the starting lineup. And if Justin Moore could ever find that form he had before he tore his Achilles in the Elite Eight, I still maintain, if they get it right, Villanova, if they get in the tournament, I swear to you, they can make a run. Let's go to teams that have played above, I would say, their ceiling, and that's Texas Tech. This team is 5-4 in the Big 12 in sixth place. Now, you're going to say to me, well, Coach, you're talking about Texas Tech, you know, in the Big 12, and they're in sixth place in their league. Why are you, you know, why are you sitting there talking about them being a surprise team? Folks, they were supposed to be in the bottom of the basement. They were supposed to be near the bottom of the Big 12. And if you look at Grant McCaslin, the job that he's done, go look at his track record, folks. This guy wins over 70% of his games over his career. Came from North Texas. Has done a great job. And like I said, and you look at the record, you're like, 5-4, overachieving. Yeah. You want to know why? They're in sixth place at 5-4. Well, go look at the Big 12 right now, folks, and go look at the conference standings, right? You look at that league. Houston's in first week. They got 3 losses. Baylor's got 3. Iowa State's got 3. So technically, they're in sixth, but they're 1 game out of the loss column. And they've played fantastic basketball, Texas Tech. And you have to really admire what Coach McCaslin has done. But they got a guy. How do you not hate a guy with a name called Pop? And he's a sophomore. He ain't an old man. Pop Isaac's getting you 17.3 points per game and had some really cooking games. I know he had 22 in that loss to Cincinnati, but 25 in that loss at TCU and 32 in a big win versus BYU. Pop Isaac's has been absolutely fantastic. And then you got to look at Joe Toussaint. 12.7 points per game, right? Every year getting better, right? And now he's shooting it. Now he's going to shoot the ball better from 3. I get it. But the free throw percentage is up to 85.6%. Junkyard dog. You know, assists, does a little bit of everything. So a team like them, Texas Tech, has really, really been fantastic. Let's move on to another team that's predicted to be last or near the bottom of the league. And oh, what a job they're doing there at South Carolina. What a job that they're doing there. You know, you think about South Carolina, you know, they obviously went to made a deep run years ago when Frank Martin was the head coach. And you got to talk about the job that Lamont Paris has done. I mean, you got to really think about what this guy has done, right? And this guy has really, as the first African-American coach, remember he was at Chattanooga beforehand. And he's got this team in second place in a league that you can argue. I don't think they're the best, but they're the second best league, team in the league. Right? Second best league, I should say, in the country. Sorry. With big wins. Big wins. And they're playing as well as anybody in the country right now. Winning 6 in a row with wins versus Kentucky and at Tennessee. Playing as good as anybody. And you look at their schedule, Vanderbilt, Saturday, should be a win. Big game next Wednesday, Auburn, right? LSU, at Ole Miss, Texas A&M. Like, folks, could we be talking about this team being a top 10 team in the country? I mean, it could be. I mean, they go win at Vanderbilt, and they go win next week and go beat at Auburn and win at LSU. Yeah, we're talking about this team being a top 10 team in the country. And why is that? I mean, we just had Pops. We're here for Pops to Michi. Michi Johnson. 14.5 points per game. Boy. Now, listen. Michi hasn't played well as of late, but he is the leader of this team and leading scorer and playing really, really well. You have to look at a guy like a BJ Mack, what he's done. You got to look at a guy like Talon Cooper. Right at 10.4 points per game, bro. They got dudes, man. They got dudes, and Lamont's done such a great job at South Carolina that he needs to get recognition for the work he did as an assistant, and then at the lower D1 level to take this team to where they need to go. Now we'll see when it comes to tournament time in the SEC tournament, but that's a league, folks. 6 teams can win it. Let's end our podcast going to the NBA and go with the Phoenix Suns all-time lineup. Here's my bench, folks. And I'll name them off, then I'll kind of go through each guy. Kevin Johnson, Tom Chambers, Sean Marion, Larry Nance, Walter Davis, and the Hawk, Connie Hawkins. So with Kevin Johnson. Really was one of the great guards in the late 80s, early 90s. Undersized guard at 6'1", three-time All-Star, most improved in 88, 89. Really was a fantastic player for Phoenix and was a point guard of the Phoenix Sun teams that went to the NBA Finals in 1993, had the best record loss to Chicago Bulls. Tom Chambers was like, we had Bobby Jones, right, for Philadelphia when we did the Sixers. This was like a souped-up version. Tom Chambers played for two teams. It was great. Seattle Supersonics and then for the Phoenix Suns, athletic. I still remember as a kid watching a Knick game, right, and he jumped so high, his knee was on Mark Jackson's shoulders, who was standing, and I think he dunked the ball with his head. Tom Chambers, ridiculously freak athlete, three-time NBA All-Star, career average of over 20 points per game with the Suns. How about Sean Marion? Very underrated player of those great Phoenix Suns teams in the mid-2000s. People think about when he went over afterwards and played with Dallas. Think of winning a ring with Dallas. Sean Marion, 18.4 points per game, 10 rebounds a game. Sean Marion, a.k.a. the Matrix, really a fantastic player for those teams that played with Nash and Sotomayor. We'll see. We'll talk about those two in a couple of minutes. How about next guy? Y'all ever heard of Larry Nance? Probably not, right? 1984-85 All-Star. Ready, folks? Larry Nance, little history lesson, kids, was the winner of the first NBA slam dunk contest. Did y'all know that? Beat Dr. J in it. Larry Nance was better known, also went on and played, had a good career with the Cleveland Cavaliers, playing with Mark Price, playing with Brad Daugherty. Larry Nance, All-Star in 84-85, really dynamic, athletic, bouncy, defensive player, really good shot blocker as well, was Larry Nance. Let's move on to a guy late 70s, early 80s. And that's Walter Davis, all-time leading scorer for the Phoenix Suns at 20.5 points per game, 4.4 rebounds, six-time All-Star. Was really part of those Suns teams, early Suns teams, that could really just fill it up as a guard, but also can dish and really can create for his teammates. Lastly, the Hawk, Connie Hawkins. Looked like a condor, the way he can move. Like, when you start talking about, like, guys that played above the rim, right? And you think about, like, Jordan, like, before LeBron, you know, or maybe Kobe, like, guys that played above the rim, you thought about Jordan, right? And then before Jordan, there was Dr. J. Before Dr. J, there was two guys. There was Connie Hawkins and a guy named David Thompson. Connie Hawkins, older than David Thompson, because David Thompson was a little bit more mid-70s. Connie Hawkins, late 60s, early 70s, Hall of Famer, four-time All-Star, 20.8 points per game, nine rebounds, 4.3 assists. Really could elevate and play above the rim. An all-time great kid. Definitely do your homework as I give you some of these older players that you have not seen. Go to YouTube. You can find plenty of highlights. Watch NBA TV. They always have stuff on these legendary players. Let's go to the starting lineup. My good friend got to spend a lot of time with this guy over the years when he was with Phoenix, and that's Steve Nash. I mean, the maestro. Think about this, folks. Dallas has messed up twice. They've let two point guards leave and go on to greatness. The one we know now is Jalen Brunson. But Steve Nash, two-time MVP, one of the great maestros. Folks. 50, 40, 90 for his career in Phoenix. Six-time All-Star, Hall of Famer, one of the coolest, most down-to-earth people I've ever been around, Steve. And that was hard because I took Steve Nash over Kevin Johnson. I took Steve Nash over Chris Paul. He didn't really have the length of time. I took Steve Nash over Jason Kidd. Over Stephon Marbury. So Phoenix Suns have had a lot of great point guards in their time, but no one's better than number 13 out of Santa Clara. Two guard, D-Book. Playing right now for the Phoenix Suns, getting you 24.2 points per game for his career. Been fantastic since coming to the league. dynamic, prolific shooter and scorer, can create his own shot. And D-Book is part of this team now with Bradley Beal and Kevin Durant, who we think can really make a title run. D-Book has been absolutely fantastic over the course of his career for the Phoenix Suns. Let's go to small forward, Paul Westphal, four-time All-Star, 20.6 points per game. Part of, I do believe, I want to say 74 or 75, part of a legendary, I think it was game six between the Celtics and the Suns. There's that picture there, right? I think being guarded by JoJo White, if I'm not mistaken. Unbelievable, unbelievable performance he had in that finals. And do you know, ready? Just so you notice, Paul Westphal was the head coach for the 1993 team that went to the NBA Finals. They had Kevin Johnson at the point, Dan Majerle at the two, and this man at center. And that's Sir Charles Barkley. 1992-93 MVP, four-time All-Star, 23.4 points per game, 11.5 rebounds. Let me tell you something. Y'all can sit here and poke fun at Charles Barkley, says he's terrible, right? How he's on TNT. Folks, you kids, go watch Charles Barkley play. And remember this, folks. I want you to understand this. He's 6'4". 6'4". And watch how Barkley played above the rim. And watch his game translate from Philadelphia. Remember, he was on our starting five for Philadelphia. And now look at what he did with Phoenix when he expanded his game to the three-point line. At the center, Amari Stoudemire, 21.4 points per game, 8.4 rebounds, 1.4 blocks. Really had a fantastic career, rookie of the year 2002-2003 with Phoenix. And I really think Amari had a great career, and it's a shame he went to New York. The knees kind of caught up to him. But Amari Stoudemire was absolutely fantastic over the course of his career in Phoenix. A Phoenix team that was as good as anyone with Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire and Sean Marion that we people thought could have won an NBA championship. People can look at that play that happened with Robert Horry and the hip check and the suspensions, and maybe that's why Phoenix never won a ring. This has been your – real quick, before I go, bench again. Kevin Johnson, Tom Chambers, Sean Marion, Larry Nance, Walter Davis, Connie Hawkins, starting lineup – of Steve Nash, Devin Booker, Paul Westphal, Charles Barkley, Amari Stoudemire. And remember, folks, that's just a starting five, not bench. That's on me with that. This has been your Betting Above the Rim podcast, episode 27. Next podcast will be on Monday, the 12th. It'll be released on the 13th. For all of your information for sports gambling, please go download that Sports Grid app. Everything you need for sports gambling, pregame, postgame, endgame, props, predictions, and more for some of the best in the business. By the way, they're all out in Vegas while JY is here in my studio here in Shrewsbury, New Jersey. But that's okay because those are my boys and they're doing a great job. We'll be back next week for another Betting Above the Rim podcast. I think we're going to go to Atlanta and give their all-time lineup. Dominique Wilkins, Trae Young. Be interesting to see. Make sure you check out the podcast. We come back next week. We'll start to get to college basketball more, and hopefully we'll get some guests. Once again, for Matt George, my producer, who does a great job, and Vinny, who does our B-rolls, it's been Coach Young. Sports Grid, always smarter than on Sports Grid. Good night.